Thanks for downloading this show from PC One. Before we get rolling, here's a word from one of the folks who helped bring you this podcast.
The following program is a PodcastOne.com production.
From Hollywood, California, by way of the Broken Skull Ranch, this is the Steve Austin Show.
Give me a hell yeah.
Hell yeah.
Now, here's Steve Austin.
All right, everybody, welcome to Steve Austin Show. I am coming to you from the mean streets of Los Angeles, California today. I'm sitting here in my office at about 11:15 in the morning on a Monday, and it is an absolute beautiful day in Marina Del Rey, California. And it's going to be a good day here on the podcast because I'm talking to my longtime friend, former roommate, former travel partner, former professional wrestling peer, Diamond Dallas Page. And you guys have been hearing me talk about Diamond Dallas Page for a long time because, holy smokes, hell, I guess I met Dallas sometime back in the early to mid-90s, and we became fast friends. And as you guys know, if you know anything about Dallas's story, he was late coming into the business of professional wrestling. Started off as a manager. Hell, one of the problems was him as a manager was he was bigger than a lot of the talent that he was with. Obviously, he had a big personality to be a great manager, but Diamond Dallas Page decided it's time for me to get inside the squared circle. And I don't think there's a single one of the boys that knows Dallas that does not respect this dude's work ethic. What I remember when Dallas first said he was going to get in the ring, and I was thinking, man, too late. 35 years of age, are you kidding me? There's absolutely no way that this guy is going to be able to make it in the ring. And I'll be damned. Man, I was living in Georgia at the time, right outside on 20 West in Douglasville, Georgia, a little town of Villarica. And Diamond Dallas Page was out there in that damn power plant every single day, paying dues, learning, listening, talking with Jody Hamilton, among other people, and just putting in the hours and the work to try to learn the craft, try to learn the trade. And then I remember him start getting in the ring. And I remember going out on the road with him. And I remember him traveling with us, me and Cactus Jack, Mick Foley. And I remember many times Dallas sleeping on the cot because he was the oldest guy in the room, but he was the youngest guy in the business. So, you know, me and Mick were the veterans. He was the rookie. Now, chronologically, it was the reverse, but that's the way it went. And I'll never forget the hunger that Diamond Dallas Page had in his quest to try to improve himself. He would record every single match he had every single night. And it was either myself, Mick Foley, Brian Pillman, or a litany of other people holding the camera and recording Dallas's matches. And a lot of times I was laying down color commentary while I was filming or hanging out with Brian or Mick doing my Gordon Solie impression. If Dallas hadn't been so cheap and erased all those videos and just recorded over them, God dang, I don't know what kind of library we would have had, but it would have been worth some money just for the hijinks. And so, man, Dallas would wrestle. We'd get in the car. We'd go down the road. We'd talk about the match. We'd talk about the night. We'd talk about all the matches. That's what you do when you're in pro wrestling, and that's what you do for a living. We'd get to the hotel. And sometimes we'd go out and have a drink, but most of the times back in those days, because it was already late enough, maybe we'd had a couple of beers on the road, we would plug directly into the TV. And this is way back before anybody was ever doing this. I'm not saying no one did it before Dallas, but no one did it to the degree that Dallas did that I've ever experienced. So anyway, we'd plug Dallas's, God dang, those old video cameras from back in the day are so archaic and antique-ish compared to what they're recording on these days. It's unbelievable. Somehow we'd jerry-rig into the television system and we'd watch Dallas's match over, and we would sit there and offer advice, critique. And you got to understand, when myself and Mick Foley are sitting there helping Dallas break down a match, now Mick has always been one of the smartest guys in the business and a very good friend of mine. I've always gone to Mick when I wanted advice on something that I really cared about and I really needed a good opinion. That's how much I think of Mick Foley. And so he's a great person at doing the quarterback breakdown, or, you know, looking at a match and saying, you know, what his thoughts are on it, offering his advice. And there was me offering my advice. Now, I think Mick had gotten into business a little bit before I did, so he had a year, two, three more experience and probably had a little bit better, you know, mind for the business than I did at the time, but I certainly offered my critique in the matches based on what I had seen, what I had been through, and I was coming along pretty well. But it wasn't like he was drawing from two of the most savvy veterans that he could have drawn from, but nonetheless, you know, he wasn't drawing from two idiots either. You know, myself and Mick did our best, and I think we helped out Dallas a lot. But it was Dallas's attention to detail. It was Dallas falling down on his face, getting back up, pressing forward, and never losing, you know, his hunger and his quest to be one of the best guys on the roster. It was a funny thing way back in the day that Dallas was so inspired or influenced by many of the guys on the card before him that sometimes he would, you know, kind of borrow some of the other guys' moveset. And so many times we started calling him Kodak and the Kodak Kid, or, hey, man, if you miss so-and-so's match, watch Dallas's match because it'll be the exact same match as the so-and-so. So he would borrow a lot of guys' stuff, as we all do. Dallas just had to learn how to make it his own so that he wasn't doing the other guy's move. Because nothing in professional wrestling is really new anymore. You take that super kick, for example, from when I broke in. I know someone was using it before Chris Adams, the gentleman Chris Adams was using it. But Shawn Michaels would probably become the most famous person for using the super kick. Now look at the Young Bucks using the super kick. So nothing's really new. You take things and you modify them and you make them your own. And Dallas was able to do that finally after some years of experience, and myself, you know, barring the Luthez from Superstar Bill Dundee. That's where I got the move from. I'd never really seen anybody else doing it. Obviously, the move wasn't invented by Bill Dundee. It came upon many years before him. But I barred that, and it became, now, when you see a WWE superstar use it, they refer to, you know, Stone Cold Steve Austin as maybe being influential in that move. So anyway, you borrow things from everybody that you see, anybody that you can see. You modify them, and hell, you go to the Diamond Cutter, which Diamond Dallas Page used as his finisher. I guess Johnny Ace was using it as the Ace Crusher over in Japan. Mine was a modified version of that given to me by Michael P.S. Hayes. Fast forward to the RKO used by Randy Orton. Everything changes, or everything's modified a little bit, but man, I really don't know who all invented this stuff. Obviously, it was all of the generations of wrestlers that came before us, and starting off in slow, methodical matches that sometimes last hours on end, strictly with holds, because that was the appetite of the people back then. They weren't used to seeing all the movement, and then all these different moves, high spots being created, movement in the ring, obviously employing different and more levels of psychology, you know, different forms of heat, shines, high spots, offense, defense, just the whole game, the way it's evolved and each generation has contributed. And now here we sit with the business being as dynamic and as fast-paced as it's ever been in the history of pro wrestling. But to get into the open, you know, basically I'm talking to DDP today, and we're going to talk about what the Hall of Fame meant for him. And I knew Dallas would probably get in there, but when you spend pretty much your whole career in a different organization, like, you know, he had the peak of his run in WCW kind of simultaneously. Dallas and I were going down parallel roads. And, you know, Bill Goldberg was going down that parallel road, too. He was having massive success. And I didn't get a chance to watch all of Dallas's body of work because I was out on the road. And, you know, you try to catch as much as you could, and he would try to catch a lot of my stuff, and the same with Bill. But you're out on the road doing your stuff. And so we kind of had really parallel paths. And when you look at what Diamond Dallas Page was able to accomplish in that WCW landscape, man, with the NWO, that cast of characters and personas that they had, the talent that they had, the depth of that roster, many guys coming over from WWE, obviously Kevin Nash, Scott Hall, and Hogan, and the whole NWO thing, Savage, I mean, there was just, man, I know I'm leaving out a lot of names, but there's just a lot of cats down there that contributed in a heavy-duty way to the business. And Diamond Dallas Page was able to ascend to the top of that card from rock bottom to the middle to getting, you know, being kind of over to then, like, you know, the bookers, the powers that be, the people in control couldn't deny the fact that, hey, This guy was getting over very strongly. And then when, you know, obviously NWO helping him out, Kevin Nash, Scott Hall, you know, taking his finish, a couple of classic matches, a great barn burner of a match with Goldberg, one of Goldberg's best matches, a great barn burner match with Sting, one of Sting's best matches that didn't involve Ric Flair. You know, Diamond Dallas Page certainly earned his way into the WWE Hall of Fame, and I couldn't be more proud of him. And, man, here's a quick story. A lot of you people know that I lived with Diamond Dallas Page when I first came out to Los Angeles. We lived in a condo in Playa Vista, about a half mile down from Home Depot. And I was a late-night person, and I got up kind of late because I stayed up late. And it seemed like every morning when I walked down the stairs to get my first gallon of coffee, there was Page sitting in his office working on what was yet to become DDP Yoga. And I kept going down and getting my coffee and going back up to my room every single day. And I was thinking to myself, what in the flying hell does this guy really think he's going to be able to do? What is he going to be able to accomplish with this yoga stuff that he insists upon changing lives and being successful? And it was like it, I swear to God. I lived with Paige for at least a year, and he was up every single morning in that office working on that program. And I'll be damned if now, holy smokes, I've been in Los Angeles 12 or 13 years, and Paige has now moved to Atlanta. So that's, man, that's a long time ago. But that was, you know, his vision when he blew out his back and started doing the yoga to get himself back in the ring and then to create this system, which he's helped change the lives of thousands and thousands and thousands of people who have tried his program. And you've heard the guys that talk about it that are still in the ring. Chris Jericho, I think AJ Styles, some other guys. I can't remember everybody, but I know Jake the Snake and Scott Hall are strong endorsers of it. And man, I tell you what, if it hadn't been for Paige, I don't know if those two guys would still be here or not. But nonetheless, you know, I'm sitting here rambling on. I've got Hershey the Wonder Dog over our guarding the door if anybody comes in. We've got Callie, our 11-week-old black lab puppy, man. She's over here going haywire. We took the opportunity yesterday to get her introduced to our swimming pool. It was her first day to ever experience water. And if you know labs, you know how much they love water. And this dog has such a personality and is such an alpha pup. She was gangbusters, and Mula and Hershey kind of inspired her to get out there and go crazy. You can hear in the background maybe, but nonetheless, it's been good over here in Marina Del Rey, driving my truck around in Los Angeles. I went to a blood drive the other day to give a pint of blood, and my truck is a cab and a half, and it's a 2003 year model, so it doesn't turn very sharp. Trying to get an underground parking on Broadway Street in Santa Monica. Holy smokes. I ended up having to valet park because those spots just ain't big enough for a long-ass pickup truck that turns in a real dull fashion. So I'm meeting a little bit of hassles with that, but I still got my 95 Ford Bronco for those kind of things. It's just nice to have a truck back so I can haul my things around and actually have the bed of a pickup truck. I cannot believe I let that truck sit around in the barn for as long as it did down at the Broken Skull Ranch. It's nice to have. Once you've ever had a pickup truck, you just can't ever go back to not having one. So I've been SUVing it out here in Los Angeles for a long time. But with the fact that I got a Bronco and a truck, now I can accomplish just about anything I need to get done as far as work. But hey, man, I'm flapping my gums. I'm talking with the one and only, one of the hardest working guys in the history of the business. And there's been a lot of hard workers, myself included, and a lot of other guys. But this was a guy who didn't see failure as an option. He put everything on the line. He rolled the dice. He went for it. And he came out swinging, and he hit a grand slam. Congrats to my buddy, Diamond Dallas Page. I'm fixing to talk to him right now. But before we get to Dallas, y'all know how much I like saving money. And you know one way I save? Dollar Shave Club. Joining DollarShaveClub.com/Steve gives you a chance to enjoy a luxury shave at an economy price. Buying a razor is a lot like buying a new car. To get smooth, luxury quality, you have to pay a high price, and the reality is that you're really just paying for fancy marketing and the features that you don't need. That's why you need to sign up for DollarShaveClub.com/Steve. Dollar Shave Club's razors are great quality. They've got the shave tech you actually need and none of the overpriced gimmicks. Dollar Shave Club is the smarter choice, and if you really want to smarten up, then get Dollar Shave Club's executive razor and use it with their Dr. Carver shave butter. The blade just glides right over your skin, giving you a close, smooth shave. Dr. Carver shave butter also helps prevent ingrown hairs and razor bumps. So say goodbye to the 24-blade swivel pivot robo razor with laser pointer that costs you your whole paycheck. Say goodbye to driving to the store to buy the cheap, one-use disposable razor that tears up your skin more than it shaves your facial hair. And say hello to DollarShaveClub.com/Steve. Join today and get a smooth shave with a great razor at a fraction of the price. Your skin will thank you for it, and your wallet will too. Smarten up and join DollarShaveClub.com/Steve today, because right now, new members get their first month of the executive razor with a tube of Dr. Carver shave butter for only $5 with free shipping. After that, the razors are just a few bucks a month. There are no long-term commitments, no hidden fees, and you can cancel whenever you want. Sign up now at DollarShaveClub.com/Steve. That's DollarShaveClub.com/Steve. Everybody's got a to-do list. Drop off the dry cleaning. Pick up some milk. Here's one for you. Let's add save hundreds of dollars on car insurance. And the good thing is you don't have to drop off or pick up anything. All you have to do is go to GEICO.com, and in 15 minutes you could be saving 15% or more on car insurance. Extra money in your pocket? Hey, it just may be the most rewarding to-do you do today.
My name is Raven, professional wrestling superstar, world-class idiot, and raconteur extraordinaire. Join me for my new podcast, The Raven Effect. Every Monday here on the Jericho Network on Podcast One, we'll be covering current events and any and all topics that can be properly bantered. Download and listen to the show on PodcastOne.com, the Podcast One app, or subscribe on iTunes. Quote The Raven, nevermore.
The Steve Austin Show.
The Steve Austin Show.
Hell, I'm rolling sound. I'm sitting here at 317 Gimmick Street in the temporary living quarters, about to move back into my compound. I got my good friend, my former travel partner, my former roommate, longtime friend, Diamond Dallas Page. We're on the video scope, as Randy Macho Man Savage would say. How are you?
Oh, dear, I dig it, brother. Thinking.
Hey, man, it's good to catch up to you. It's good to see you. What you got going over at the Yoga Performance Center right now, the DDP Yoga Performance Center?
You know, today we were just talking about it earlier. My good buddy Ice Train, who wrestled back in the 90s with us, he's here. And he not only has his own security business, where he's got a bunch of big brothers that do protection from Jack Nicholson to 50 Cent. I mean, he's a big time, especially when it comes to the big fights in Vegas and all that. But he also trains, because, you know, he's a 700-pound bencher back in the day. And he strength trains a lot of these kids that are going to these combines for the NFL. So he brings them here on Mondays. Like, Monday's his DDP yoga day. And he does the app a couple other days, and it's helped him not just lean up, but, you know, start to tie his ligaments and tendons together. And, you know, especially for the strength training that he still does. He's way down off the big bench, but his goal, bro, is to do 225 75 times. He did 62 times the other day. He's 52 years old.
Dude, that is not amazing. Are you kidding me?
Yeah. You know, things are going really good, man. I'm coming off, an amazing last couple of months.
Man, I want to take you back and talk about the night when you were inducted to the WWE Hall of Fame in 2017 class. It was a hell of a class, and it was just like, you know, you were the first guy inducted that night. Your speech was off the charts. Everybody was off the charts on this particular induction ceremony.
Yeah.
The presenters.
Pretty amazing.
And then all of the inductees were just so well-spoken. I was watching the video of Triple H. I guess probably he was calling from Stamford, Connecticut, wherever he was calling from. And where were you? On the beaches of Jersey when you got the news? Where were you?
Well, let me take you back, bro, because you know I didn't even share it with you till later. And you were one of the first people I shared it with. I was filming Positively Living, the biopic that they did for my DVD, which, you know, I'm home. I'm at my sister's house. My mom lives. She has her own special little quarters there. And, you know, they live on a beautiful canal, you know, one of the little lagoons and stuff. And, you know, it's my home away from home. And, you know, the WWE's interviewing my mom, you know, and my sister, my best friend, Gary Rossi, since I was 12 years old, we were best friends, and my wife, and interviewing everybody. And then they went on a walk and talk with me and, you know, went down to my old street that I grew up on and down on the boardwalk. And I got my little Diesel, my little French bulldog.
So that was down on the Jersey Shore.
Right, Point Pleasant, right where I grew up, like where memories will last forever were made, you know? And I was at my good friend Linda's, her bar, and I'm waiting, you know, they're setting up, and then I get a phone, you know, the phone handed me by Mike, the producer, and he goes, boss wants to talk to you. So I get on the phone, and I can't hear it. And if I go, who is it? He goes, it's Triple H. I go, hey, Paulie, hey. And then he starts talking about my career. And, you know, because he was there, just like you, when I went from manager to wrestler. And he's like saying, like, what? I'm thinking, what's this guy thinking? He's 35 and a half years old. He goes, I'm 22. And I'm like, what am I thinking? You know, and then he starts talking about the power plant. And, you know, and I've stopped thinking about, like, what I'm supposed to talk to him about. Because, obviously, maybe this is maybe that call. And, man, I look around and I see the cameras and they're filming me. And then he says some really strong, you know, really praising stuff to me. And I realized this is that call. And it choked me up. It like hit me in the chest like a ball of fire, man, you know. And it took my breath away. It still does now, you know. And it just felt really amazing as he said, we're putting you in. I couldn't really talk, you know. I just said, I love you, bro, you know, and that's where they ended. But they show another clip because we kept talking after that. And I said, I just wish Dusty was here. And boom, because he was, you know, super tight with Dusty too. So I hang up the phone, I hand it to Mike, and Mike goes, so what'd you think? I go, what do I think? I think I wish you were filming him. He said some amazing stuff. And he goes, oh, yeah, we were filming him. I'm like, seriously?
But it was amazing. But it was a setup. I mean, they knew that they were filming a DVD for you, and they knew that you were going to go into the Hall of Fame, so they just made it all happen and organically capture you while you're doing business.
And Paul had said to him, Triple H had said to Mike that morning before he left, he said, he called him up. He said, hey, we're telling D today. He goes, today? He goes, yeah. He goes, I want to capture this. And he told me they've been wanting to capture that moment with the boys forever. But how could you not know?
Right.
We got a camera in your face.
Yeah.
And I was like, one in a million, you know? So I was just so happy that it was me, man, because you know what it meant to me. That's what, you know, means to all of us. It's super huge, but it's super meant to a lot.
You said something earlier. You said that my remarks to you when you told me, when you gave me the news, was one of the most memorable. I can't remember exactly what I did. How did that conversation go?
I said, hey, by the way, I just want to let you know I'm going in. You go, going in? I go, yeah. Hall of Fame. He goes, yeah! Oh, man! And he goes, oh, I'm so happy for you. Like, you popped. You were driving up, man, you screaming. Like, you had the best reaction to anybody. You're like, you're going in, man. Long overdue, man. So I'm so happy for you. Like, you were as happy as I was for me. And that meant a lot, bro.
Here's a question.
You were there.
I know I was. And it was like I said on the open of the show, I said a lot of times I didn't get a chance to see what Paige was doing. And I was, you were trying to watch as much as me as you could, but we were on parallel paths. As I was getting hot in WWF, so were you in WCW. We tried to keep in touch with what each other was doing. But, I mean, that's when the business was really exploding. And then, you know, when you work for a territory, you know, pretty much never, briefly for WWE, but you spend the biggest body of your work in WCW. Did you ever really expect to get that call?
You know, part of me said, I know I'm a Hall of Famer. Like, I knew, because no one had done it like I did. And I just knew in my soul I did. But I know that I never really produced what I should have produced there when I got that call to go to WWE. And, you know, it was so short. And then when... once I started to see how they were bringing guys in, like when they brought Scott Hall in, they brought him in as Razor Ramon. And like that was what was featured. Like some of the NWO stuff was there, but not really. Razor Ramon.
Right.
And well, if you do it like that, well, you know, people would say to me, you know, you ever get bummed out about your run, you know, when you were in the WWF? And I was like, who'd Michael Jordan play for? The Wizards or the Bulls?
The Bulls.
I mean, I played for WCW when we were killing,
yeah.
You know, and that's when I was on top. So, and I was really the only self-made WCW guy made, you know, at that time. Now, Goldberg would start to come on strong as hell. And, you know, by the way, man, did those guys have a great match at WrestleMania? I mean, that's the greatest 4 or 5 minute match. Man, I was jumping up and down.
Dude, I'm with you. I thought it was off the charts. I thought it was everything that it needed to be. It paid everybody off. It made both guys look like monsters. You know, Goldberg does the favors. Brock moves on. You know, they made Goldberg. I mean, people remembered, you know, what he was and the physicality and the timing of his. I didn't need to see a 12 to 15, 18-minute classic from these two cavemen. I needed to see brute force, and that's what they gave us. High explosions, big moves. I thought they crushed it.
Hey. I was at where the party is, you know. By that time, I was back at the hotel, and I had all my group of people with me. And, man, I was jumping up and down, selling like a friggin', like a fanboy. Because I was so happy for Bill, because I'd gone by to see him twice during the day. And both times, I could see Billy was pulling himself down a little bit, you know. And I just... like shook him up, like, dude, you're Bill Goldberg. I don't want to see that. You're going to go out there. You're going to kill it. Yeah, well, I'm sort of hoping. I go, no, you're going to kill it. You deliver, dude. I mean, I pump, and he, and I would watch his shoulders roll back and his traps pick up. And then a couple hours went by, and I walked by. I saw his wife. He goes, please go back and talk to him. Just go back and talk to him one more time. And I went back there, and I hit him hard, and he did great.
You're not going to believe this, but I was talking to Bill a few weeks ago, and I gave him a call because I wanted to tell him, you know, congratulations. It was an outstanding performance. I know he had a lot of weight on his shoulders, a lot of pressure, and he was telling me he was feeling, you know, kind of a little bit nervous or down. He told me about you coming by, and then by the time he went out there, he was about ready to explode because he was so ready to go. And he just left it all in the arena, and he had an outstanding time. And, of course, him and Brock crushed it. But, yeah, he mentioned that to me, that you had came by and kind of picked him up. And he was just, I mean, by the time, you know, Goldberg, he could run through a couple of brick walls if he wants to. So they went out there and crushed it. Hey, I want to ask you about your speech. I just got finished watching it, and I remember watching it live that night. And you just knocked it out of the park. And I know you've been doing a lot of speeching with your DDP yoga stuff and all the seminars that you do. But how long did it take you to come up with that speech? Because there are so many things that you said, from your Henry Ford quotes to Einstein and everything else, and all the people who helped you in your career. How long did it take you to put that piece together? Because it was off the charts good.
I literally started the night I went to bed after my call from Triple H. And all I was doing was telling stories, like writing stories, like I can't forget this story. I can't forget that story. And, you know, for all the years, me and you have told a billion of them. And, you know, my favorite one is the one I ended with. And you had asked me about that Dusty Rhodes story. And, like, I would get so emotional, Steve. It was the most cathartic thing I'd ever done because my stories, as you know, are really long. Well, now I got to make them really short, but I still got to have the inspiration and the pop. We got to have the laugh. And I got to Jody Hamilton. And you know the assassin. A lot of people don't know him who's listening right now, but Jody Hamilton with his brother, the Mauler, the Missouri Mauler, they drew money on top as a tag team wearing hoods for 25 years. And he's the first one to believe in my work. He ran the power plant. And when I would say, I want to thank you, Jody, like when I was just going through it, there would be points where it would just be, I want to thank you, Jody. It meant the world to me. And then there were times, Steve, where I couldn't say the words. And I would just start crying. And there was times I tried to hold it back. And there's times near the end, especially the last 3 days, I just let myself go. And it might take 2 minutes, bro. And then I could let it go. So now I got to tell you the behind the scenes thing. This is hysterical. Foz, you know Foz, right? One of the writers comes up to me. I'm there on Wednesday. I see him Thursday. My thing's on Friday, right? I've got my speech down. And I know it's long. And it's probably 26, 27 minutes. When I see Foz, he goes, you know, I want to get together with you. And this is walking in the, I didn't realize he had called me. So we're walking in the hallway. And I said, Foz, you don't think I've got like my whole speech done? He goes, well, you know, I know you do. He goes, but maybe we just go over a few things. He goes, how long is it? I said, 20 minutes. No, it is 20. And he goes, oh, they really like it like 10 to 15 minutes. I go, 10 to 15 minutes? You're telling me that now? Now, you know me. Now, I got a big party with 20 of my friends and family who are there. And I got to do that. But I leave with him. I go up to the room. I start, how am I going to pull this together? You know, like, I work on that till I have to go to dinner. I leave dinner at 10:30. I got to go up there. I wrote till 4 o'clock in the morning. Next morning, 10 o'clock, I'm up. I'm writing again. I get a call from Foz. He goes, hey, D, he goes, can we go over what you wanted to do? He says, your Diamond Dallas Page. He says, you got 20 minutes. I go, I got 20 minutes. He goes, I just want to go over it with you. I said, no problem. So here I got it down to 15, but now I can make it 20 again. So he comes up, and you know, I do all the voices. Yeah. The Michael P.S. Hayes, nobody sees coming. You know, of course, Randy and Jake and Dusty. And at times, you know, I get really teary-eyed at it, man. You know, and I'm still not really owning totally where I could just lose it at any point in time. And Foz loves it. So he goes back, calls me back. He says, D, do all those voices. Do your whole thing. Don't go over 30. That's what he says to me. He goes, don't go over 30, man. Try to keep it around 25. I said, no problem. So we go over there to do the warm-up. You know, you walk out there. Spit out, Dallas, don't lean down. We're going to move the microphone to you. And he goes, okay, just pick up anywhere and start talking. And so I start off with to think that I'm driving my 1962 pink Cadillac to the ring, WrestleMania 6. And a little trivia note here, I didn't get the gig. The car did. I'm doing a ride-along. And Vince goes, that's tremendous. Or whatever. That's awesome. Whatever he said, he loved it. He popped on that. I thought, if you're popping on that, bro, I got you.
Hey, tell me about the 62 Cadillac convertible. Where'd you get that thing and why'd you sell it?
Oh God, it was the first divorced wife I never had. It cost so much money to keep. Thing broke down so many times, but it was so much fun. I bought it in 1985. It was white. I painted it pink. I put the white leather seats in with the pink piping. Had a sound system in that car that, dude, you could hear me from 3 blocks away. It was all through the back with a convertible, you know, would sit back down on. It was a big ass speaker, and I had speakers all over it. It was Luke the Bushwhacker, who, you know, Jake Roberts, I met him in my nightclub. That's how I met him. And I wanted to tell that story, so let me tell it here. I don't think I even told you this. I'm at Norma Jean's Dance Club. It's 1986, around 1986, maybe 97. Jake's hotter. He's as hot as he can be. I'm in my office, and we had a camera out where you could see people coming in because they're, you know, paying to get in. And as I'm looking at the camera, I see a guy walk in with long hair. He's huge. He's got a leather jacket on. Like, got the Fu Manchu. Like, that looks like Jake Roberts. So I run around the back. And as I walk in the door, I go, Judy, did Jake Roberts just walk in this club? She goes, I think he did. I go running in, and right as I see him, I got to slow down because I got to be cool. So I walk over and I go, you know, he's on one side of the bar, I'm on the other. And you Jake Snake Roberts. He said, who's asking? I said, the guy who runs this place. He goes, yeah, I am. I said, what are we drinking? Next thing you know, we're drinking buddies. And man, you know, Ted DiBiase would come through there. I have a picture. I don't tell anybody on the other, but I will show you a picture of me and Ted DiBiase that you'll be laughing for 3 days. Shawn Michaels came through there with Jannetty, the Bushwhackers. Luke and I just bonded. Did you ever spend any time with him?
Never. I've never spent any time with the Bushwhackers.
He is one of the most nicest human beings ever. And to know that they went from the Sheepherders, which were the craziest, baddest tag team, they were extreme before extreme existed, and then become the funny Bushwhacker guys. And Luke is still doing it at 69 years old. He's at my club, and he said, you know, mate, they're going to be doing this thing with the Honky Tonk Man and Rhythm and Blues. And like, you know, mate, I think Pat Patterson might want to use your car. And I'm like, seriously? He's like, yeah, mate, let me give him a call. He calls him right there. He goes, Pat, I'm looking at this beautiful pink Cadillac. It's perfect for Rhythm and Blues. And he's like, he goes, you're in, kid. He goes, I'll give Pat your number. So Pat calls me to get the car, and he wants to know what it costs for the car. I said, Pat, if you fly me up and you let me drive the car, I will do it. You got it for nothing. Just get up there, no payday. Just let me drive the car. WrestleMania 6, I'm there. And that's how that gig got done. And I kept it for the longest time until it was finally, you know, it was time to let it. I would love to know where it is.
As long as I've known you, you've never told me that story. You know what? Thank God you painted that pink Cadillac pink, or that white Cadillac pink.
Right.
So did you stay in touch with Jake? Did y'all become lifelong friends at that point, or was it just during the club days and then he disappeared and then all of a sudden you come back and get into wrestling in the power plant and he turns into your mentor? Tell me about the time lapse that happens between the club days and the power plant days.
Great, great question. Well, Jake, I probably got to party with him, you know, 4 or 5 times over that period. And like, he's telling all the boys because, wait a minute, we got this mark. You know, I'm not even doing wrestling yet, dude. I'm not even managing yet. And, you know, there's Miami and then there's Tampa. Well, the perfect layover is Fort Myers. So the boys would stay at the Ramada that was across, literally across the parking lot from the club. So, you know, I got to know a lot of the guys coming in and out. So now Jake, for some reason, I don't see him for a long time. And I'm doing the managing stuff, right? And I don't see him over that period, and I end up in WCW, and I'm in the power plant, and Jake, remember when he came in for like 3 months?
Yes.
He shows up at the power plant, and he's looking at me, and I turn around, I go, Jake, and he goes, where do I know you from? I go, Fort Myers, the club in Lower Jersey. He goes, that's right. And we connected, and me and Nash would be like his, you know, Mutt and Jeff driving for him. Did I ever tell you the time that we were driving Rick Rude's Mint Impala?
At the blue, yeah, the blue convertible. I remember that car. No, you never told me that story. What happened?
So Rick wants to get his car up to Atlanta, and it's in Jacksonville. So he says, does anybody want to drive it? Well, me and Nash, we were like, hey, let's get home. You know, it's a 7-hour trip. No worries. Jake's like, I'm in. So we got the case of beer, right? We're going down the road. I'm driving, which never happens because Nash would never let me drive.
Dude, you're the worst wheel man in the history of the business. Please continue.
I know you'd appreciate that. But I'm driving, right? And the one thing I forgot to tell you is I had this when I had the 62 pink Cadillac, the night I am on my way to Tampa, this is probably the night that really made my career. I'm working in the AWA, and I've got Mike Graham has asked me to come up to manage Bad Company for the Eddie Graham Memorial. And I've got a buddy of mine named Rock Hard Rick who wants to be a wrestler and 2 Diamond Dolls. 40 miles outside of Fort Myers, 90 miles from Tampa, the Cadillac is, the AC's blowing. It's beautiful. It's, oh man, this car's running like $1 million. Boom, 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 boom. I threw a rod. The car dies. Got the AAA comes. Right as AAA comes, these guys at Rednecks in a pickup come by. Hey, ain't you the guy that runs Norma Jean's? I said, yeah, I am. Man, we love that place. I said, you guys like wrestling? Hell yeah. I said, I'm also Diamond Dallas Page. I'm working up in Tampa. You guys want to come and see wrestling? I'll get you in for free. Hell yeah. Let us go get some beer. They would get the beer. They show up 5 minutes later. A girl is somehow, they picked up this girl. And we got the case of beer in the back as we are driving. Mr. Limousine Learjet's Diamond Dallas Page shows up in the back of a pickup that drives 90 miles in. So that story said, here I'm driving Rick Root's car. The AC is blowing. This is a 19, I want to say 67 or 68. It's maybe it's a 72. Whatever it is, it's a classic. And it's driving beautifully. The AC is like a brand new car. And then all of a sudden the generator light comes on and the car shuts off. And Jake goes, I go, guys, the car just went out. Jake says, stop screwing around. I go, I'm not screwing around. The car just turned off. And I just go, those old cars, you can just turn on the ignition. Boom, turn on ignition. Oh, okay. Start it up again. Drive another couple of minutes, boom, red light comes on, generator light, car shuts down. It's 12 o'clock at night, we're on I-10, there's not a light on the road for miles. I'm the smallest at 6'4", 250 pounds. Jake 6'6", 240 some pounds. Kevin 6'10", 300 pounds. Who's going to pull over and help us? We are in the middle of nowhere. We're finishing off the beer. You're trying to wave cars down. They're just boom, blowing by us. And all of a sudden, I look around and I go to Kev. I go, where's Jake? He goes, I don't know. He goes, he started walking that way. Jake went looking for one of those phones that are on the side of the road. An hour later, where are we going to go? We can't leave Rick's car there. We're not getting picked up. Jake rolls up in a tow truck, lit up, got his beer in the front seat. Next thing I know, we are on our way. Kevin, Jake, and the driver. I'm sitting in the back of the Rick Rude's car as they take us to some place to park the car. And when we get there, it's like 4 o'clock in the morning now. There's 40 rednecks there. And they are all there to meet Jake the Snake. And what other two jabronis are in that car, right? So Kevin and I would laugh at this later on. Imagine the people who had that picture up on their wall, and it's got Jake Snake Roberts, but they also got Diamond Dallas Page and Kevin Nash, but they probably never even knew it.
Make it a cameo.
Right. Oh, God.
What ended up doing to the car? Just put a new alternator on it?
It, you know what it needed? You know, when you take the generator and you pull it and you tighten up the belt,
yeah,
that's all you needed to do.
Boom, you
but
fixed.
None of us were freaking mechanics, so none of us knew.
Hey, man, God dang, we started off talking about the Hall of Fame. We're telling road stories. That's great because my crowd loves listening to road stories. But I want to take a break right now for the sponsors. Keep the show on the air for free. I'm coming right back with Diamond Dallas Page, inductee to the 2017 WWE Hall of Fame. Well-earned, well-deserved. Coming right back. All right, have to take a minute here to make sure y'all are hooked up for Mother's Day. It's just a couple of weeks away, folks, but don't worry. I got you back with an idea that both Mom and your wallet are going to love. The Books. I know that sending flowers online isn't always easy to do. Sure, you get hooked in with that $19.99 advertised price, but then when you get to check out, the price suddenly jumps to $100 because of all the shipping and handling and special care charges that get added on. Here's the solution, Books.com. Books are farm fresh flowers that can last up to 2 weeks. They're cut to order, so they are always fresh and they're guaranteed to last. Books flowers start at just $40, so they won't break your bank either. And when I say $40, I mean $40. Ain't no hidden fees, ain't no special care and handling fees. What you see is what you get with the Books. And right now, if you register at Books.com and use my promo code Steve, you'll save 20% off your order and receive free weekday delivery. And if you're looking to earn brownie points with Mom or any other special somebody in your life, then you should register for the Books Just Because service, which lets you randomly surprise someone however many times a year you'd like. You choose the flowers and delivery dates, and the Books take care of the rest. So, register now at thebooks.com and use my promo code Steve to save 20% off your order and get free weekday delivery. That's promo code Steve at thebooks.com. If you're in the market for a car, then you need to check out True Car. True Car gives you the price and information you need to feel confident about your purchase. When you register with True Car, you'll see what other people in your local area pay for the car you want. And from there, you can connect with the local True Car certified dealer and enjoy a more confident car buying experience. True Car shows you real pricing on actual inventory, so you see competitive pricing offered to you by True Car certified dealers for vehicles that are actually on their lots. And you'll also see all the dealer incentives before you get to the lot so you can feel confident about the price when you show up. True Car makes car buying easy, no matter if you're looking for a brand new or used vehicle, and the stats don't lie. Over 3 million cars have been sold to True Car users by the True Car Certified Dealer Network. There are over 13,000 dealers in that network, with some 700,000 pre-owned vehicles available. So do yourself a favor and go to True Car for your next car buying experience. True Car doesn't just make the process easier, it'll also save you some money. True Car users save an average of over $3,000 off MSRP. So when you're ready to buy a new or used car, visit True Car to enjoy a better car buying experience. Some features not available in all states.
The Steve Austin Show. The Steve Austin Show.
All right. Before we left off, you know, I was watching your speech and listening to you talk, and you brought up the name of Jody Hamilton, one of the assassins. And for all the boys out there, anybody that know hardcore wrestling, way back in the day, the Assassins were an extremely feared tag team. Jody Hamilton was a menacing promo who commanded your respect. They were absolute badasses in the ring. Tell me about how you earned Jody's respect, because that's not something that's easily done. Here you are, 35, a dude that's seemingly too old to get started in this business. When did it dawn on you, or when did Jody say, okay, this dude's legit, he's for real, or he's got the gumption or the balls to carry this thing forward?
Well, you know, for starters, the first thing they're going to do is try to run you off. Like you think you can wrestle? Really? Like, I would watch Sarge run guys who used to play for the Raiders for 3 years, you know, that were chiseled to the stone, 6'8", 300 pounds. And I'd watch him, you're not going to walk out. He'd grab them. They were so exhausted. You're running out of here, and throw them out the door. And I'd watch that over the years happen. But starting out, I was that guy. And they tried to run me off. And man, what I make, you said it was a friend of yours, and I've never forgotten it. You said the word decide, it's Latin origin. It means to cut off all possibilities. Like, I knew what a decision made, when you make a decision, how important it can be. I knew what the word decide meant, but you took it to a different level for me. And it's always become part of my speaking. And at that moment, man, failure was not an option to me. You know, I love that line where I said, I can't tell you how many times I hit that mat and I thought to myself, man, this fake stuff hurts like hell. You know, they love that. They roar. You know, do I really want to do this? You know, but the answer was yes. And there was no other choice. Like, I knew no one believed in me, but I did. And I knew I should have been a part of the 80s. So maybe it was better I wasn't a part of the 80s. Maybe I'm supposed to be a part of whatever I'm doing right now. And man, I was the first to come. I was the last to leave. And when I was there, I was in the ring the entire time. There was three rings. I'd go from ring to ring. If I wasn't working on, you know, wrestling, chain wrestling, bumps, punches, kicks, you know, whatever I could, you know, movements around the ring. And what I found that just putting all of that work in was starting to pay off, and I could feel getting just a little bit better. And they already started putting me out on house shows like very quickly. And then I'd be off and I'd be back at the power plant. But I remember about the third month in, Jody pulled me into his office. And he said, you know, kid, you know, you got a great work ethic. It's rarely seen anymore. If you keep doing what you're doing, you might be able to pull this off. And I felt like, yes, like somebody, and of all people, to be him, because, you know, I had studied his career and I knew how smart he was about the business. And I became one of his guys, and I would become the guy he would use as the example of, if you do what DDP did, well, you might just be able to pull this off.
What were your thoughts when you told Michael Hayes that you were going to get in the business, or you wanted to wrestle? Because that's the story when he actually fell down because he was laughing so hard. He would go on later to come back and give you a phone call after your match with the Icon Sting, when you guys rocked the house, and told you, hey, man, I've never been so happy to eat crow. It was a great story in the speech. But tell me about the story when he fell down, because no one believed in Dallas Page but you. So when this guy, your buddy's rolling around on the ground, what are you thinking?
Well, you know, we're in Chattanooga, and you remember that blue screen that's there?
Yeah.
Like, you had to go through this blue, big plastic screen. And I remember looking back at him, and Jimmy just sort of, like, you know, Jimmy, if he was drinking milk, Jimmy Jam Garvin, he would have spit his milk through his nose. But Michael, like, he just, what? And literally, like, it overtook him to such a degree, like, what are you even thinking? That he fell down on the ground, on his back, rolling around. They're playing our music. It's the last time I'm going to walk these guys to the ring. And I just gave him your favorite number one sign, and said, see you out there. And there would be a lot of times, like, did I ever tell you the time Steiner ended up ripping everything off of me. Did I ever tell you that story?
Dude, I was there. That was at the Stoke.
You were there. You were there. You were there. You were there. Thanks for helping me. Michael set that up beautifully because I had these beautiful pants on that they never could have got off because they were jeans with all the diamonds on them. He's like, you really should wear these sweats, you know, I don't want to ruin your pants. And oh my God, we had, they had ribbed me on so many different levels. And, you know, so when Michael left and he left WCW and went up to WWE, to become the writer and the guy, man, what a run he's had. But I hadn't talked to him in years. And when he called me the next day after that match with Sting, and, you know, when I heard, bite, you know, pay ass, and I ran, like, I pick up the phone. I was so happy to hear this because I wanted to talk to him. And, you know, son of a God, Mike, you okay? You all right? You know, like, yeah, I'm all right. Like, he's mad as hell at me. You know, Paige, you know, sometimes you don't want someone to pick up the phone. You just want to leave a message. And that, the people pop so much because every one of us have done it, right?
Yes.
You know, now we just text. But I said, you want me to hang up so you can call back? And everybody blew again. No. Paige. Gotta be honest, you know, I have never been so happy to eat crow in my entire life. I'm proud of you, boy. Click, and he hung up with me.
But here's the thing, dude. Michael Hayes don't give a whole lot of lip service to somebody. I mean, so when, you know, when Michael Hayes puts you over, it's real deal.
It's real deal. It's, you know, I don't know if I ever told you this. My relationship started with Michael P.S. Hayes in the AWA, the WCCW, Memphis, and the AWA were coming together to try to do a pay-per-view. It was a total cluster, but they tried. And they went for 3 days. I only worked 1 day a month with the AWA. 1 day, I filmed 4 shows. But on this weekend, you got to remember, I've never been on the road. I've gone to Vegas, stayed at a hotel, boom, flew home. Maybe stayed a couple days in Vegas, but I've never been on the road. So now I'm on the road. And somehow, Hayes and I just hit it off. And I end up in a car, Jerry Lawler's driving, Eddie Marlin, his booker, is in the shotgun. I'm behind Eddie, and Hayes is behind Jerry. We've got our beer. Michael's smoking because he knows Jerry hates it. And I guess Mike didn't get too good a run when he was in Memphis. And, man, he loved busting Jerry's chops. Big time. Big time. And it was a great time. We sat in that car. As you know, you can really create some relationships. And we sat in that car for probably 3.5 hours. And the biggest thing Hayes said to me, you know, kid, I know you care. You're not here to be a television star. You're here because you love the business. And he gave me his number and he would call me back.
Really?
Every once in a while I call. And when I came into WCW, Dream put me with him. Now, you talk about baptism by fire. I don't think I ever told you this. I am going to manage the Freebirds. P.S. grabs me, introduces me to Jimmy, and he says, Jimmy, here's what we're going to do. This guy's got some chops. We're going to have our backs to the camera. Dallas, promo's on you. Oh!
How'd that go off?
He loved it. I don't remember a thing I said. I would love to see or hear it. It was baptism by fire. And, you know, the Hayes and I favored each other. You know, we looked similar. We talked similar. but we were two originals, you know, and we were literally twin brothers from different mothers.
Dude, when I go back and look at some of your old promos and that highlight reel, that wonderful package that they put together for you for your Hall of Fame induction, something about the 265 pounds, chisel and stone, B-A-double-D bad, all that stuff. How long or how hard would you sit and try to come up with all this stuff that you were going to try to say? Because it was over-the-top stuff. But, I mean, it's stuff that a lot of us cut our teeth on, and that's what you know, you go to that heavy-duty stuff. But how much time did you put into your promos or just trying to say all the gimmicks and things that you said?
Well, you know, I love the way Muhammad Ali talked, right. You know, and he is not the originator. Gorgeous George is. Because if you watch anything about Ali, that's who he gave all the credit to. But Ali, of course, was an original and I think the best.
Yes.
And out of that comes Dusty and Superstar. And, you know, I mean, Dusty, the way he talked and the way he rhymed and the things he did. And I wanted to be something like that. So I literally would look, I would get joke books and I would just, you know, 1,000 jokes. I might find one. I might find two. I go back and find movies. Like every time I hear Gary Allen, we're both country music fans. Gary Allen's one of my longtime favorite country stars. And one of the lines he said, I'm going to be an SOB right down to the letter. And it, you know, and I used it in the promo, you know, like, oh, that's awesome. I just made it work and I would write them down, you know, and I would also write back, like write down hope spots, like different things for matches and stuff. Like I wanted to have as many different hope spots to fight out of. Like I used to love when someone would choke me down in the corner and do the walk away and do the diamond cutter sign, right? And right as they're turning, I'd pull myself up from the ropes, snatch them, pull them in the corner, bing, 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 shoot them off, reverse, that knee, DDT, boom, and I'm back down again. You know, all that kind of stuff, because I was always thinking about what the next thing was. So a lot of it, I knew I could use again later, but I didn't want to use it all the time, you know. And it really helped a lot later on. And it's so funny, I was talking about the other day, like these kids today, you know, they're given these sheets of things that they have to say. And it's tough because, you know, like, I came up with my own promo.
Right.
I came up with stuff A to Z. Now, I knew what I was going to say before I got to the building, and I knew I was going to refine it, and then I knew half of it was going to be not used. But the other half I was ready for. And then, like, it was really hard in the beginning. Listen to what Lee Marshall's saying. Answer that question as opposed to answering your own question. Like, have that conversation. Like, who did it better than Jake? You know, or Dusty, or right. Flair. You know, like, they were amazing. Watching all those guys do, like, oh, dude, I have to share this with you, because you know about my history that I've had with Ric Flair over the years. And I've never told you a story. This was the most amazing moment of my career, and I want to call it that. About 8 years ago, I was coming into a autograph session, and I just watched Rick get, you know, when he did, they gave Rick the most beautiful send-off of his career with the balloons and the tribute to Ric Flair, and, you know, and I'm knowing I've gone through heat with me and him, and I'm like, I don't want to feel this way about this guy. I mean, I love this guy. So we were both at an autograph signing in Jersey, and I made a decision what I was going to do, and I hoped it worked out. And I just happened to be back there right as he walked in, and everybody, fanfare, everybody's all over him. And when the crowd diminished the boys, he turned and I was standing there. He's like, hey, Diamond. And I said, hey, Nate. I said, can I talk to you for a sec? And he said, yeah, sure. So I pulled him off the side, just me and him. And I said, you know, I know that we've had heat over our careers. And he goes, oh, Diamond, don't worry about that. I said, Nate. I said, I'm not worried about it. I want to fix it. I know I've said stuff. I know you've said stuff. You know, I don't know how it all started, and I don't care. I said, I'm like a fan of yours, man. Like, as I love the Nature Boy. I love how they sent you off in WWE. I was happy for you, man. I don't want to feel this way about you. I don't want you to feel this way about me. I said, I want to start all over again. And I put my hand out. I said, I'm Diamond Dallas Page. And he gave me that big hug. And it was the beginning of letting all that past go. And then I'd seen him a couple times at TV because we all did the old school Raw or whatever. And he came up to me one time with his girl, Wendy, who I love. And, you know, Brenda was going through cancer at the time.
Yeah.
And, I mean, he was amazing, you know, and so was she. And, you know, we talked and got us even tighter. And then Dusty passed. And, bro, you know, the boys are probably all over that city in different hotels, probably a big group in one part of them. But I end up in a hotel that I just go for the 4-star hotel where you get the good gimmick and blah, blah, blah. Nature Boy's there. His family, my wife, we end up seeing each other at lunch, glass of wine. You know, nobody picks up Nature Boy's tab, right. But I mean, I got it for everybody and his whole crew. And he was like, what, that son of a bitch? So when I came back in a hotel, when he saw me, he said, DDP, get your ass over here. I'm buying dinner. I've got the wine. Get over. And he loves my wife, Brenda. We had the best time. So I've always wanted to tell him what that night when he put me over meant to me. But I wanted it to be exactly what it was. And I didn't know when I was going to do it, but I knew I was holding back for a reason. And when I got up there and I talked about that story with Dusty, and then, you know, the 4 years, the 4 months, the 14 days later, I get in the ring with three of the biggest icons ever, the Stinger, the Hulkster, and the Nature Boy. And what a great pop he got there. And then I wanted it to come down, and I want to look right at him and say, Nate, Rick, I want to thank you, man, for changing my life that night and stepping me one step closer to this podium. And I will never forget it. And I am eternally grateful. And then I went off, you know, to do my next part where I was going. But the words thank you to me, to you, to Rick, to Savage, doesn't matter who it is. The words thank you cost nothing. And they mean so much, especially when they're heartfelt.
Right.
So Monday night, you know, I'm going to, me and Brent got done with dinner, and Nate is at the bar, he, you know, waves out, and I said, baby, I just want to say goodnight to Nate. Walk over to him. He goes, so what time are you leaving tomorrow? I said, 7:30. He went, ho-ho! He goes, no, you're not. He goes, you're still in Atlanta? I said, yeah. He goes, you're flying with me. I got the Learjet. You and Brenda, come on, we're going tomorrow. We leave 2 o'clock. I go, 2 o'clock? I go, Rick, I got all these bags. He goes, have FedEx send them for you. They'll be up there in 2 days. You're flying with me. I said, can't say no to that. So we friggin' start having some cocktails early, get on the plane, fly in. He finds out it's my birthday, takes me and my wife out to dinner, and then we got us limoed home. It was like that ended my Hall of Fame weekend, bro.
That's a pretty good send-off.
What a crazy send-off, man. It was amazing.
Hey, here's a question about your developmental stages. When you were, I guess, maybe doing the, it might have been when you were working with the Diamond Stud and you were the manager of Scott Hall. But you had the cigar, you had the bubble gum, you had the sunglasses. I mean, you went through this whole list during your speech.
Right.
You were over gimmick in action.
Yes.
So what was it? I mean, because you had all these gimmicks. You're trying everything. You're throwing everything at the crowd, but the kitchen sink, you're trying to get over. And it kind of goes into Kurt Angle's acceptance speech, or when he went into the Hall of Fame, goes, don't be afraid to, you know, take chances with your character. So here's you trying every single thing, every gadget, every gimmick to try to get over. But it ends up being Eric Bischoff who just says, you know, tells you to lose the gimmicks and just be you. And right. That's ultimately how you got over, right?
Right. You know, and it wasn't all at one time. He would take one away at a time. And I'll tell you, Steve, the moment, like, I smoke cigars. I don't do it all the time, but I like a good cigar. And I like the look. I just think there's something about it. And I've got my cigar. That's all I've got left. We're in Atlanta at the Phillips Arena. And it's just brand new, the Phillips Arena. We're sold out. It's either right at the end of 96 or 90, right in the beginning of 97. Probably right in the beginning of 97. And he comes, and I'm not beating anybody. I'm just beating, you know, enhancement guys. And he walks up behind me, and my music starts playing. He goes, lose a cigar. I go, come on, E, man, I really smoke cigars. He goes, lose a cigar. I go, dude, I go with somebody. He goes, do you trust me? He goes, you're really good at helping other people, but you're not so great all the time at producing yourself. He goes, you got to trust me here. And I threw the cigar off, and I swear to you, Steve, I walked out to the biggest pop. When I threw the Diamond Cutter sign up, everyone in Atlanta did it. And I'll never forget this big guy. He looked like Bruiser Brody, like he should have made it. I want to say his name was Rick. Can't remember his last name. He had real long hair. He was 6'6", 310 pounds. Didn't have a great body, but he was a big Brody guy. And man, he went to slam me, and I turned in a Diamond Cutter, and that roof blew off. And I thought, lose the cigar. That's all I
heard. Did you feel weird walking out without a prop?
The only reason I didn't is because everyone in the building threw at the sign.
Right.
You know, like that sign, and I would love to have gotten more detail in it, but I couldn't really give it to it. That sign was what really put me over the top, because as you know, the storylines are written. Who goes over? Well, there's a guy named Daniel Bryan, and when he started doing yes, and every single building, not only the people in the building, but three buildings away are doing yes, you had to put that guy over, no matter what you thought he looked like. I love that kid. And one of the reasons is because he defied all the odds.
Yep.
And that's what Diamond Dallas Page was. And that sign was my yes.
It was.
And when you saw people, when I'd hit them, like one of my guys who works with me, and you know him, Dylan, he works for me. And back when he was a kid, I'd given him all my DVDs of all my matches. And he didn't even know how to edit back then, but he'd film his camera on the TV. It's called Diamond Cutters on Everybody. And it's the progression of the Diamond Cutter. And you'll see a couple people pop, and you'll see, oh, that one was okay, that one was okay. Now people are starting to react, throwing up the hand sign, and then it starts to take on a life of its own. And when I would hit the move, the entire building, like half the building threw the Diamond Cutter sign when I hit the move. And it just shows you all of that. And if you go back and look who I hit, everyone's an enhancement guy. And that's when you know something's over.
Right. Hey, just think, what would you have done had Ron Reese not said to you, hey, man, did you ever think about throwing up the diamond sign? Because we're talking about it right now. That was your trademark. And that's how people can give the signal, hey, we're behind this guy, just like the yes thing for Daniel Bryan.
I don't think it would have worked. it wouldn't have worked as well as it did. And I know it for a fact because there was a point where I won the Lord of the Rings, which was our King of the Ring, which they made them stop because it was too close to the King of the Ring. But the two guys who had won that before me were Sting and Dusty. And you know, when those guys won, every top guy in the business was, they were the last seven guys, you know, unless there was somebody they were trying to bring up. When I won, the top guy next to me was Barbarian, who was an awesome, awesome guy. But everyone else was best mid-card or lower players. And I realized, like, that was booking, like, not really set up for me, set up to fail. And I made myself a promise, like, coming out of that, I was going to do what I did, get over the Diamond Cutter, and I was going to get this over, the Diamond Cutter sign. Because I could say, because the way our Lord of the Rings was set up, it was tag teams, just like with you guys, right? Was it tag teams or singles matches you had to do? Well, ours was tag teams. So it started out everybody in the company, and then it slipped down to 16 guys. Then it got down to 8. So you had to have 2 matches before you got to the end. So I had 2 matches in. Then I'm doing this match, and it ends with Barbarian. And I won't tell you who the agent was, but you know when an agent is there, and he's there to say, okay, Steve, you get your stuff in, but you get Steamboat over.
Right.
Like, you get him over. It's his night. Well, this is my night. And I brought this finish to Kevin Sullivan earlier because he couldn't tell me who was going to be the last 8 guys. And really, he didn't want to tell me. And I love Sully. But this is a time where I wasn't on the top of anybody's agenda. And so I gave him a finish that me and Chris Canyon had come up with. And it ends up with me hitting 3 guys with Diamond Cutters, pinning one, pinning this next one kicks out, do-si-do, over the top rope he goes, I go over. So I give that to Sully. Yeah, okay. So now I'm with the agent, and the agent hears that, and then he says, well, let me run that by Kevin. And God had Kevin walk in the door at that moment. And he goes to leave looking for it. I go, Kev, hey, wait. Just want to say, yo, you like that Triple Diamond Cutter finish, right? Yeah. The agent says to me, well, you know the finish better than I do. You go tell the boys. So you want me to tell everybody how I'm going to beat everybody? And when you want me to do that? Okay. Now, out of those 8 guys, 4 of them I got jobs for. So I knew those guys would be, D, whatever you want to do. And then you know one of the biggest, baddest men alive is Barbarian.
Yeah.
You know, and always been a super sweetheart to me, but, you know, now I'm going to tell him how I'm going to beat him. So I don't know how that's going to go over because this guy could kill me.
Yeah.
Just being honest, you know. I might have put up a fight for a bit, but basically he's going to kill me. But so I tell the finish, and I say, and then Barb, you kick out. And then, you know, we do a little thing, you know, a couple false finishes. Then, you know, pick back and you flip over the top rope and I go over. And he looks me dead in the eye, Steve. And he says, no, brother. And I'm like, oh, no. And then he says, I take your finish. I go, Barb, you don't have to. But you already took it and kicked out. He goes, no, brother. Tonight, your night.
Wow.
I take your finish. Dude, I hugged him as tight as Savage hugged me. And there were times where, you know, Eric, you know, was, you know, moving talent out. And whenever I heard him say Barbarian was moving on, I was like, dude, you fire me before you let him go. Like, there's nothing that, like, I've never forgot. That was a big deal.
Hey, man, you said in your speech, you said you don't learn from winning. You learn from losing, from falling down. That's how you learn. Yeah. I agree with that 100%, because anybody can get their hand raised. And, well, sure. It takes a special person to be able to get over. Winning can certainly help that. But I'll remember when I first came into WWE, man, they were beating me like a drum. And I was working with a lot of top guys, but, you know, right. The guys that I was beating, you know, weren't very high up on the card. But I always tell everybody, man, losing will teach you something that winning cannot. And sometimes right. You can lose a match and get over more than the guy that won the match. But explain to me your philosophy about you learn from you don't learn from winning, you learn from losing.
You know, the best example I can give is Cody Rhodes. When he was a kid, like, I was there around him all the time. And I'll never forget, he said he was going to stop playing football and he was just going to focus on his wrestling. And in his sophomore year, he told me he was going to be the state champion his junior year. I said, that's a bold statement, young buck. He said, I've got my goals. I said, awesome goal to have. So I moved to L.A. that year. And he's 11-0. Then I call him when he's 23-0. Then I call him when he's 37-0. And he's like, oh, Dallas, you just don't know. Like, they came and they you know, the papers, and, you know, they're interviewing me, and, you know, and you know, they're doing something to me and dad. Like, I go, excuse me, yo, young buck, I don't know. I go, three-time world champion. I'm like, no. I go, listen to me. Keep your feet on the ground, kid. I go, you get to the state championships, you're undefeated, I'll be there. So I flew home. He went 48-0, won the state title. The next year, I think he was like 13-0, and he lost. So I call him up, like, hey, Bo, like I don't know, but I know he lost. He's like, Dallas, I lost. I mean, I can't believe it. I lost. I go, thank God. And he said, what? Why would you say that? I said, Cody, you don't learn anything from winning. You learn from losing. You learn from falling down. You learn from making mistakes. I go, let me ask you a question. Would you rather have been undefeated and met this kid in the semifinals and he beat you there? No. I go, dude, take ownership of it. Come up with a different way of training. Switch that tick in your mind. Here's what he did. Nobody wanted to be pinned by Cody Rhodes. So all these guys are caring about is not getting pinned. So what did Cody do? He'd take him down, ride him, let him up. Take him down, ride him, let him up. He got in insane shape. I am there at the finals of his second state championship. He is wrestling that kid who beat him. His grandma's down there, Dusty, Michelle, and he's there. Get Dallas down there. So I'm down there with the family. He ate that kid. And we had a thing at that time where if he won the state championship, he was going to go after his acting career and come out to L.A. And after the match was over, I said, so what are you going to do? He said, I made the decision before I got here. I'm coming out to L.A. I said, what if you would have lost? He said, failure wasn't an option. And I just went, sounds familiar. And so I'm really hoping, you know, he loves the business so much that he didn't really leave on the best note how he should have left the WWE, but everybody forgives. And he's Cody Rhodes. And I think he's a great talent. And I think this going off and doing his own thing, sort of like I did when I was with Jake, I think it's going to help him grow. And I think that he'll end up coming back to the company. And I think he'll be super, super valuable because I think he's going to learn a lot on the road, what he's doing right now. And he loves what he's doing. Like, he is his father's son. you know, and really, really proud of him.
And then one of the guys you brought up in your Hall of Fame speech was obviously your mentor, Jake Snake Roberts, and we've talked about him a little bit in the past. But when he called you in 1997 with the phone call, said, congratulations. You're like, for what? And he said, reinventing the DDT.
Mm.
Tell me about that phone call. And were you aware of what you were doing?
Putting the diamond cutter together, because Johnny Ace, and it's so funny, someone sent me a video of Cowboy Bob Orton doing an RKO. I just saw it last night. It was unbelievable. And I don't even know if Cowboy knows he did it, you know. But Johnny Ace, he would grab the guy standing up with his right hand and make the peace sign with his left. And then he dropped the guy to the ground. Well, once he gave that to me, I'd worked so much with Steven Regal. He taught me so much, especially about just chain wrestling in general. And yo, right, Regal, he'd go 60 minutes, you know, down at the power plant, you know, straight through wrestling, calling it, never saying anything. You know, he'd been doing it since he's 15. Well, he taught me that hold the cravat.
Yep.
And like, you can't get out of that hole. Now, Brock Lesnar could get out of it. You know, Kurt Angle might be young. I'm sure he could. You know, Big Show, but not anybody else getting out of that when I put it on him, especially in my prime. And it took me a while to figure it out. But the first time I took a diamond cutter out of nowhere and I showed it to Jake, it was the biggest, like, smile in his face I'd ever seen. And he had taken a big draw of that cigarette, and he looked over at me, and he went, now you're getting it. And he said, people want to be surprised. And that was the beauty of the stunner and the diamond cutter and the DDT, the surprise that the people could, you know, that was, for me, I never really would have put that to the DDT, because you know that was the move of the 80s, you know.
Right.
But for Jake to say that to me, you might as well hand me that world title belt, you know, because that's what it meant to me.
Now, when Eric Bischoff put you in the Hall of Fame, I wanted to ask you, how did you make that decision? Because I'd almost automatically assumed it was going to be a Jake, because you put him in, and I just knew how much you looked up to him. How did you come to the decision that it was going to be Eric Bischoff, another great friend of yours, to put you in?
Well, I'll tell you, they wanted a list of names. Right. And you were on that list.
I know.
It was you. It was Mick. Jake, Scott, and Eric. And when you really look at it, Eric was the best choice because of our relationship and what we had gone through together. And man, to hear that he was worried that he wouldn't deliver for me. And you know Eric Bischoff, he don't put anybody over.
Right.
And he don't ever show that side of him. And for him to say that on the times that he said it, you know, really was special for me. And because he and I had a bit of a bump prior to this where we didn't talk for a long time. And it was just stupid. You know, he's not a really good people person, and I expected him to act like a normal person. he's just not really great on the phone unless it's business. And I was so touched by his. Of course, he had to get his obnoxious line in twice.
Yeah,
anybody who loves your page will tell you.
he was shooting. Everybody would say that.
Absolutely, and I loved him for it. You know, to me, it was just I couldn't have asked for a better. For a better induction. I just couldn't, you know, couldn't have asked for anything better. And, you know, the whole thing that he's talked about, when he talked about what the heart is.
Yeah.
Because, you know, he had no notes. Like, he was like, he had it in his head what he wanted to say. And Eric, unlike me, who will practice something over and over and over. Because the more I do it, the more I own it. And then I don't have to think about it. And him, he wants to do something two or three times. Okay, now let me go do it. Because then it feels raw and fresh to him. And man, I was so touched by, like, whatever the bump in the road we had is over. You know, we're back to where we were, you know?
Well, he totally crushed it and just did a great job of setting you up so you could knock it out of the park. What did it feel like for you to be out there with your girls there at the Hall of Fame, looking at everybody in the audience?
You know, it was so funny because, you know, the whole diamond cutter sign thing, you know, when they put up diamond cutter, I didn't even call that. Brittany did. So, you know, and she said right before we went out there, because they couldn't be there for the rehearsal. And that's what I was worried about, you know. And walking out there, I'll tell you, right, I'm watching E, and I'm listening to it, but I'm, you know, not 100% in it. But it touched me enough, you know, watching the video and everything. And I got my girls, and they've never walked out there. My youngest, Rachel, she goes, "What if I trip?" I go, "Baby, you're not going to trip." You know, would have been a hell of a high spot. But right before we walked out there, and knowing I've never done this speech, Steve, where I didn't have to stop for like 30 seconds to a minute, because it's just too emotional. As I'm walking them out and we're going through the tunnel, I just looked up and went, "Dream, get me through this." You know, and I walked out there and did the deal. And I used to have diamond dolls. Now I got diamond daughters. And, you know, they stepped back and threw up the diamond cutter sign. And, you know, and I give them a kiss. And Lexi forgot. And the little face my wife loved. But I made the face like, oops. You know, like, she wasn't even aware of it. Like, you know, they look so beautiful. And, you know, my two girls, Kimmy, you know, I've been the only dad she knows, you know, since she was born. And Brittany since she was 7. And Race, you know, since she's 12 now. You know, it's been 5 years for me and Brenda. And Lexi, same thing. Like, Lexi out in L.A., you know, she, I just have such an amazing relationship with all four of them. And it was really great to be able to showcase that and give them that moment.
Man, I knew when I was having, in the middle of my run, you know, I knew I was having a good run. I knew I had a great run by the time I rode off into the sunset. But, you know, I just kind of figured maybe I'd go into Hall of Fame one of these days. I certainly didn't get into wrestling business to get into Hall of Fame. I just got into business because I wanted to be a wrestler. And things ended up turning out that I had a really awesome career.
Yeah.
But I was sitting backstage in Houston, Texas, right before I went in, and they put on that 4 or 5 minute video package, and all of a sudden I got to see all these cool things that Stone Cold Steve Austin was able to do, and all the fans, you know, around the world living vicariously through his actions and through his storylines, anti-authority stuff, all the hell raising, stomping mud hole stuff. And it was really right at that time, Dallas, when I realized what my career meant to me. And now I can see what it meant to the rest of the world. Did you have that same feeling? Did you all of a sudden have this light come on? Like, hey, man, I really was a big deal.
You know, I just think it was more like when I got the world title, like when Savage, the guest referee, handed me that first world title.
Yep.
Man, it wasn't numb. It was just like a feeling of, like, I don't know how to explain it. I couldn't put it into words. Like, it felt so good, but I felt like the whole world came off my shoulders, you know, because that was the impossible. And doing that speech, when I got to the end, and I got to thank the WWE Universe and, you know, thank the WWE for this amazing birthday present, you know, it was just like, I just felt like all the water come up my shoulders, you know. It's like, this was an amazing, amazing journey I know it gives a lot of people hope, you know, because they look at me and they think like, wow, you really can do anything. You know, maybe it's not exactly what you want to do. You know, I've heard you say it too, you know, shoot for the stars, keep your feet on the ground, shoot for the stars. But, you know, way better to shoot for the stars and miss than shot for the curb and hit it.
Hey man, I just want to congratulate you again, because like you said on the phone call, I was thrilled that you were going in and you went in with an awesome class. What's right around the corner for DDP and DDP Yoga?
Well, you know, our app is really, oh God, it's really a whole different level right now of fitness and lifestyle. We've never promoted it because I've been waiting to have all the bells and whistles. I've been waiting for the educational part so that you could come on here at any level and understand where to go. Like, we took our program guide that people loved, and next week on our app it'll be part of the introduction. So I don't care if you're 400 pounds or you're so beat up or you're really old or you're a top shelf athlete, you will know where to go, and it'll be so self-explanatory because of the program guide now is a site within the app. So the instructional part is all there. So that's the part I'm really excited about. Starting to work with some top athletes. I've got one coming down here from Temple University that should go first round in the draft, but had to have surgery on his groin and his hip in January, and just 5 weeks ago on his shoulder. So this big 6'6", 325 pounder is going to be down here with me for 5 days. And I said, kid, just get yourself here and I'll take care of you. Because I really want to help him have that year. Because if he has that year like he had last year, he could really be in a hell of a spot. And helping athletes, you know, getting them, because that would totally gives, like, it'll take it out of the realm. Like, so many people call what I do yoga, but you know it's not. There's a reason why I call it DDP yoga, because it's not yoga. It's yoga for people who wouldn't be caught dead doing yoga. And when I get a couple of more of those really top-shelf athletes, like, I'm really looking for, Steve, the kid who's 27, 28, even 29, who used to run for 200, you know, 1,200 yards, you know, 800 yards, 1,000 yards in the NFL, but now he's running for 200 because he's always hurt. Like, give me that guy. Give me him with a work ethic like mine, the talent he has, and I will show him how he can have not only an amazing following year, but a longer shelf life than he's ever had. So that's really what my goal is right now. And still doing all, you know, regular people, because that's my big focus. But I want to start to get to the top shelf athlete. Like, if I could have got the Tiger Woods, I still think today I can help him. But he's had 5 back operations. Don't have any. Come to me. Get with me, and let's see if we can fix it before you do the surgery. Because once you start with one surgery, you're going to end up with multiple surgeries, especially when you're doing what he does. So if I could ever get to him, I know I could help him.
Tiger Woods, you have been invited to the DDP Yoga Performance Center. Hey, man, it was good talking to you. Good seeing you again.
Hey, buddy, I like the little Skype thing here. Awesome. Hey, buddy.
I'll show it to you. Good talking to you.
Great talking to you, buddy. Great time.
All right, everybody, give me the go home. Q's time to wrap up his podcast and ride off in the sunset. Before I do, I want to thank my good friend, former travel partner, lifelong friend, Diamond Dallas Page, for joining me on today's podcast. It would have been great to chop it up and see Dallas in person at the DDP Yoga Performance Center down there in Georgia or here in Marina Del Rey, but sometimes you got to Skype on these things, and it was just good connecting with the guy. And to Dallas, I say congratulations on a hellacious career and congratulations on all the worldwide success you've had with DDP Yoga and the thousands and thousands and thousands of lives that you've changed because of your body of work and your commitment to the business of professional wrestling, and then your commitment to trying to help people unlock their body and become a healthier person by exercising, doing yoga, and practicing great nutritional habits. DDP has all the keys for success and all of his DDP yoga stuff. Obviously, you heard that talked about during the show, but once again, thanks to Diamond Dallas Page for doing the show. One of the hardest working guys I know and just a straight up class act. I've had so many damn good times with that man. Up and down the road, having a few cocktails, living with him in Playa Vista, California. They should have filmed that and made that to a reality television show, because you talk about the Odd Couple. God dang, I think we would have taken the cake on that. But anyway, Diamond Dallas Page, and check out that video of the week of Page getting the news himself straight from COO of WWE, Triple H. You know, it's pretty emotional, pretty powerful, and they did a great job, as they always do, of assembling those packages. Anyway, gang, all those shirts that you used to see me wear on Broken Skull Challenge, and those of you in the UK that are still watching the show right now, all those shows are ProWrestlingTees.com/Steve Austin or BrokenSkullRanch.com. I might have sold the ranch, but the brand continues. We've got some new shirts coming out real soon. And also, if you're thirsty and like a cold beverage, check out my IPA, Steve Austin's Broken Skull IPA. You can find it at Whole Foods and Total Wines if you live in California, or order it from InsideTheCellar.com if you live in a state they ship to. And, man, you can find everything at Steve Austin related at BrokenSkullRanch.com, including both of my pocket knives, the Cold Steel Broken Skull Knife and the Cold Steel Working Man's Knife. Broken Skull, a little bit more expensive, higher end. Working Man, a little more cost effective. Won't hurt your back pocket if you lose it or destroy it. It is designed to work. They both are. And I want to say thanks for supporting all the fine sponsors of the Steve Austin Show. That's how I'm able to do this podcast for you twice a week for free. And you can find all my sponsors at podcast1.com. Just click on the Killer Deals button at the top of the page and then click on the Steve Austin Show banner. Hey, folks, the 60-second AP News headlines are coming up next. Until then, with the vacuum cleaner in the background, my name is Steve Austin, and I will catch your ass down the road.
Download new episodes of the Steve Austin Show every Tuesday at podcast1.com. That's podcastone.com.